what you had for lunch or for breakfast. And then I'm going to see, like, how the volume is working. So, go for it.
I didn't eat anything for breakfast this morning.
No.
I didn't. I talk kind of soft anyway.
Okay, if you don't mind, I'll just move it closer to you so that you don't have to talk louder than, like, you normally would.
Okay.
Do you want to try it again? Just tell me, like, do you have any pets or...
Yeah. I've got 4 horses and my boyfriend has 6 horses.
Wow.
And a donkey.
That's impressive.
You have to open that. It's locked.
We should put a note on the door.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good reminder.
Hey. It's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. We haven't started. I had a gentleman at the front desk ask him to speak with one of our managers. He won't really tell me why. But I'm a bit confused as to what he wants.
Okay.
I figured he'd be the best go-to.
Yeah, can you tell him I'm in a meeting? Is there any way he can come back? Is it a patient?
Yeah, it's a patient. I don't really know what he needs, though. I don't even think he knows what he needs to know. If you need to go do that, feel free. I don't want to make him wait for an hour. But he doesn't seem angry or anything. He just wants to help. He said he talked to the manager before and they helped him get straightened out.
Oh, can you, is it... Can you take a message, maybe? And and tell him I'll call him back. So he can go where he needs to go. Maybe I can handle it over the phone.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure. I don't want to, like...
Yeah, it's fine. You'll probably have people coming in and out anyway.
Okay.
It's just me. It'd be different. Usually we have a clinical manager that can handle that.
Mm-hmm.
But now, it's just me right now, so...
Okay. Well, people can... Should I say do not disturb unless... I mean...
Unless
they're
urgent.
Yeah. I don't want to mess anything up with the way this clinic is running, but... do you have any tape?
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about your horses, and I was trying to see the volume on this. okay, so where is that? Like a farm around here?
No, I live in Coates.
Where's that?
About 7 miles from here.
Okay. I'm going to move this a little closer to you. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want it to be like all up in your business.
I can talk a little louder. I just don't talk very loud.
That's all right, yeah. I'll just like, if I need to, I'll like do this or something, but, okay, perfect. And then one last thing is that I'm going to try not to say mm-hmm as you're talking because then it messes with the recording.
Oh.
But even though that comes naturally to me, so I'll just be nodding.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean that I'm not listening.
Okay.
I'm going to try my best.
That's fine.
All right, great. So this is Maddie Kameny. It is June 26th, 2018 at Comwell Health in Dunn, North Carolina, and I'm here with...
Jeanette Godwin.
All right, great. So, if you don't mind, I want to just start by talking about, like, how you got into healthcare.
Well, my parents always took me to the doctor when I was little. Every year for physicals, immunizations, I hated needles. I was absolutely paranoid, afraid of them. And my, I actually had an accident when I was 18. I fell through my front door, and I had to go to the ER and get stitches and the whole nine. And then I realized I was not afraid of needles. I wanted to be a vet, but I followed my vet around. I had a bad experience with that, so I decided to let the horses be my therapy. And when I realized that probably getting shots and all that stuff was not going to hurt any worse than what they had to do to me at the ER, applied for nursing school and got all that done.
Awesome. I'm sorry, the pen clicking is gonna like, is that okay?
Yeah, I'm
I know,
sorry.
It's comforting for me too. I do it like naturally. All right, so can you talk a little bit about, so your like schooling, how you got into Comwell Health specifically?
Well, when I had the accident, I applied in the fall and got in at Central Carolina and got my CNA. I worked in the hospital for 4 years as a CNA. The last 2 years, I did prereqs for LPN at Central Carolina. And then I got in and did the LPN program. And then I went back and bridged the gap for RN. And I worked at a nursing home for about 6 months as an RN. When I had my LPN, I worked about 18 months with Heart and Health's clinics. I was a float nurse. And the last 10 months is when I got my RN, and I worked in the clinics part-time. And then I worked in the nursing home as a nursing supervisor for 6 months. And then I did not really like management, and maybe I didn't like the environment of a nursing home or a skilled facility. So I started looking at other jobs, and I had a friend here that worked in dental, and she told me I should apply. So I applied here and a few other sites, and I ended up getting a registered nurse, the staff floor job. As Dr. Bilk's nurse for 2 years. In the past year, I've been the director here.
Oh, wow. Okay, so how was that experience of being here different from when you were at the nursing home?
At the nursing home, there's a smaller knit group of people. There's only like 4 or 5 people in administration that run the buildings. And every morning we would meet at 9 o'clock to discuss insurance, which rooms pay the most, which rooms insurance was running out, whose rooms had to look a certain way. And it was really, really geared about insurance and reimbursement. Some of the patients, I was in administration, but I like to try to take care of them and help the CNAs, and I was frowned on for that. Some of the other girls in administration were younger. I don't know if they were jealous or however they were, you know, girls pin girls against each other, and I didn't want any part of that. It was nothing but political politics. So I started looking at other jobs. I didn't like that environment either, because it wasn't about the well-being of the person. It was about the insurance reimbursement, and that's not the side of health care I wanted to be on. So
you're working directly with patients now?
Mm-hmm. This role's half and half. And normally there's a clinical manager underneath the director that catches a lot of the overflow. But we're such a big clinic and we have an overflow of walk-in patients. A lot of times trauma patients. I still cover in the lab if we have too many people out on PTO or emergency appointments. I'm still staffing quite a bit now because we don't have the other position. It's filled, but she's a nurse at our other clinic, and she's the only nurse, so we have to fill her position before she can come here.
Gotcha. So can you talk a little bit about working directly with patients, like what that means to you, or things that have happened?
Working in the other clinics with Heart and Health, I don't know if it's location or if it's patients with insurance. However, there seem to be a lot more drug-seeking behaviors, and moving here, it's more of a community-based, caring environment. And the patients here, probably we see 68% uninsured or indigent patients. And the patients coming here are coming here for care because they can't afford insulin or can't afford to manage chronic diseases, or they have diseases they don't know what it is and in their country don't have the money or means to find out what's wrong with them. So, a lot of the patients that are coming in here legitimately need care, and I feel like I definitely make a difference in helping them get that care in whatever role I play here, whether I'm the one taking their vital signs reporting it to the providers or if I'm the one making sure their prior authorizations go through so they can get their medicines for free, working with the pharmacy. We have behavioral health. We have dental. A lot of the patients need dental services they can't afford or have never had. So I think this environment is definitely, I think it's more what people go to school to be nurses for. You make a difference. I feel like I do every day.
Yeah. Can you talk about your, kind of your personal experiences with healthcare? Like you mentioned that accident that you had, but what was that like when you were at the hospital?
Everything happened kind of fast. Fell through the door in my front on the front porch, and when I fell onto the glass, so I cut my knees and my hands and stuff. And so, the hospital was only like 6 miles from our house, so I was got in my own car and was driven there. And of course, I was bleeding actively, and so they took me straight back. The only thing is, there was one doctor on call because it was a Saturday morning, and he was having to revive somebody else and then come and clean me up and sew something and then go because they kept crashing. So I kept begging them to put me to sleep because I was so afraid of getting a shot or anything like that. Like I said, I had an unrealistic fear, I guess. And so they gave me an IV and gave me medicine to relax me. I don't know what it was, but I would sleep and then wake up when they would start, you know. But they had to give me a lot more medicine because they had other things going on. But I didn't have a bad experience. In fact, I felt like they took good care of me. I just didn't want the shots. And later on, I had different places like come out where I had to have little places because the glass was like that tempered glass and it was real small. And so I had other places come out that had to get cut out, just like an outpatient clinic. And I found out it wasn't really the needle that hurt. It's the lidocaine itself. It burns when you get that. So that even helped me even further to realize, you know, that it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. So I learned a lot about that later on. I guess experiences, you learn a lot from your experiences.
Yeah. But what were your experiences like with doctors and healthcare before that incident?
Obviously, I had my pediatrician. I was fine going to the pediatrician because I went frequently. I can't remember because I was an infant, but as I got a little older, you know, when they wanted to prick my finger, obviously, I was just like any child. I screamed and kicked my legs, and my mom would have to hold me and then spank me later for being a bad youngin', I guess. But I think that's pretty normal. I've worked in peds, and we see all the time. Some kids don't care, and some kids are bad. But, I mean, I just think it's how it's presented, because I've heard a lot of parents say, my parents were fine. They never really talked about me getting a shot or not getting a shot that day. They never tried to prepare me or not prepare me. Because, you know, naturally as a kid you ask, am I going to get a shot today? And my mother would be like, well, I don't know. And that's true because they may not know what I'm due for or not due for. And but I've worked in peds and other parents will say, if you're good, you know, I'll get you an ice cream, or you know, if you're bad, I'm going to make them give you a shot today. So I think that changes the child's perception of the doctor's office for sure. Because parents can threaten them, and that's bad. That makes you never want to go back. Like when you get old enough to make the choice for yourself, I could see how that would change somebody's psychological process.
Are you hesitant to go now as an adult?
No, because like I said, after that accident, I had two bad experiences as a child. Not terrible, but just things you remember, which probably made me so scared of the needle. I had a lymph node duct that got blocked, and it made my lymph nodes swell up, you know, something terrible. So I went to the doctor that morning. They gave me two Rocephin shots. I'll never, you know, they beamed you over the table and have to give it in each buttock. And I that was so much antibiotics at one time. I threw up before I ever got to the doctor, to the hospital. They sent me to Wake Med. I had to spend the night. I got an IV. That was terrible. There was like five people that had to sit on me because I was just, you know, I was only five. My dad got me like a big bird from the stuffed animal from the gift store. Both my parents were crying. They were upset because of how, you know, scared I was and stuff. And I remember getting a CT scan. I was good for all the tests. Once they got the IV in me, I was fine for the rest of the stay. But I remember that. But like I said, I have good parents. So as I got older, it's like, you know, they're your comfort. You know, when you're little, I think you're a little bit more resistant anyway because you don't understand. The older I got, the more I understood, the more I trusted them. So, the other experience was me falling through the door, and I had my tonsils taken out. I remember my mom, like, I was younger, even younger than when I had the IV, and they had to rip me, like, off of my mom to take me in the back. That was awful. But, I mean, I was so young. I think anything like that is traumatic because you don't have the knowledge. You don't understand. It's just something different. So.
Right. Can you talk a little more about your parents?
Yeah.
What they did and growing up.
Well, my dad, he did appraisals with his dad in Irwin until I was like 5 or 6, and then he went back to school and got his accounting degree. And my mother's been an orthodontic assistant for about 30 years, about 28 or 9 years now, but they worked, and my sister was kept in daycare for a little while until she got really sick, so she couldn't be with the other kids. She got croup and a lot of respiratory infections, so we stayed at home and had a lady that came and took care of us like a couple days a week, and then we stayed with my grandparents the days in between. We were fortunate we got to be at home a lot when we were little before we started school, but I can say that I'm far, farly more blessed than probably a large percentage of the world, because my parents, we've all had, you know, rough times and stuff, and they have too, not getting along and getting along, but they're the kind of parents that stick together for their kids. They tucked us in every night and make us say our prayers every night, and we say our prayers before we eat. Eat is a, you know, big thing, eat as a family. You know, they always supported anything we wanted to do. My sister did theater and music and went to Meredith College for vocal performance. And I rode horses and rodeoed since I was 9 years old. And my dad took me every weekend. And he made as many of Catherine's plays and performances as he could, and took me to every barrel race they had on the East Coast that we could afford to go to. So, I have good parents. I'm close to both of them. A little closer to my dad, maybe, but that's just because my mom kind of did the other stuff with my sister more, and he kind of did the horse stuff with me. But we had their 35th wedding anniversary last night, so we surprised them. They had a big surprise. Then we sang for them and stuff. Me and my sister sing together and sing in church together. And I mean, like I said, we're not perfect. Mom had early midlife crisis and about drove all of us crazy, but you know, we worked through it and stuck together, so just blessed. I love them. We all love each other. We're close-knit.
What about your town growing up? How was that?
My grandpa kind of had a large influence in our town. We grew up in Irwin, and they had the Irwin Mill, they had the denim factory and stuff, and when a lot of the workers were moving into Irwin, my grandpa, he had a lot of different businesses. He owned an electric store, the furniture store, he started a construction business, and he built a lot of the mill houses for those people to come in and work. So, he started his own insurance agency. He sold insurance door to door because my grandma didn't work. She stayed home because there was 3 kids, my dad and his brother and sister. So, When they grew up, they worked in his businesses with him, and then they went on. And my dad's 2 siblings, they're lawyers, and he ended up being an accountant later on. But he did appraisals with Grandpa for a while, and then, but I always felt safe. Our town, I grew up in a small town, so I never felt I never heard of any murders or violence or that kind of thing. Like, I think that's probably different from growing up in a large city. Because I grew up in a very small town. So, as long as I did my homework before I got home from school, I rode the horses every day and took care of them and fed them and cleaned stalls and stuff like that. I didn't just have them to have them. My dad made me take care of them right. So, that taught me responsibility from a young age, because my dad never knew anything about horses. So, I went 3 days a week with a trainer that ran a farm in Newton Grove, and she ran a farm for some people. So, I learned a lot from her. A lot of responsibility. So when we went to these places when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, we would go to Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Dad and me would go with the horses in the trailer, and if they got sick or if something happened, he didn't know. He trusted me because I had learned how to take care of them. So,
what else do you think you learned from your parents?
Everything. I have good parents. My dad, you know, he's an accountant, so he's always helped us manage our money. My dad is a dreamer, and my mom is probably on the other side of a realist, but my dad is a nurturer. He wants to nurture and feed the dreams. You know, you only live once. You can't take everything with you when you go. You get one, you get one shot at it. So he'd rather live happy than live rich. You know, he makes enough money to help, you know, do what he has to do, take care of my mom. He helps my sister out a lot. I pretty much take care of myself. He helps with the horses. He bought the last, we only had one truck for like 15 years. And when that one was getting where it was kind of not dependable, he bought a new truck. And he said that would be his last contribution because I was still in nursing school. So I bought another trailer once I'd gotten out on my own, probably been nursing for about 4 years. Last year I got a different a horse trailer. And he bought the truck, but that's the last thing he really pays for. I mean, he asks me all the time, do you need anything? Do you need any money or anything? And I'm pretty independent, but I don't know. My parents have definitely taught me how to love, you know, how to care. I think we care really deeply. I think that's a lost thing. I think a lot of people are really money-driven, which is sad because I think the poor economy creates that in a lot of people. People live for things, you know, not relationships. But I think a lot of people have changed. I think a lot of people are probably more superficial. If they want things, then they're not treating people like a person with a heart and feelings. They sometimes want people for their money, or, you know, if their parents weren't good to them and they didn't get a good childhood or have that love and affection, then some people are very vulnerable and they seek approval, you know, from people. And it doesn't matter if that person's a good person or a bad person. People get stuck in bad relationships. They just want approval. It doesn't matter who the person they're getting it is, who they are, who that person is. They just want, everybody wants to fit in some way. But I guess because I've been very blessed with my parents, you know, I had that approval. So I have like my self-awareness and like my approval of myself. I feel like when you have that support, I think maybe you're a little bit more selective about who you choose to be with and what type of life you want to live. I guess maybe that helps you see it more clearly because you're not so focused on that. If you have that support,
right,
you're not so focused on that.
Do you think the community that you grew up in has changed since you remember it, since you were a kid?
Considerably. Like I said, there wasn't really any violence or anything when I was growing up, but like there's I think poverty plays a large role. There's people, like, they robbed the Dollar General, like, 3 times in the past 6 months. Like, nobody wants to work there and stuff like that. But that was not going on even when I was 16, even 8 years ago, when I was 16, 17. That's been 10 years. But, I mean, even in 10 years, it just seems like, even in the grocery store, like, you're a little bit more guarded. Like, where I'm at, I've lived in Coates the past 6 years, and I don't feel like that in Coates. But some of the people have changed. When the mill left, a lot of things changed in Irwin.
When did that happen?
I was probably 15 or 16, so about 3, 4, 5 years after that, things changed, and environment kind of changed.
Did a lot of people leave, or, like, new types of jobs came in?
No. So it kind of got desolate, honestly, and then, you know, just a lot of different, I guess, like, poverty, when that kind of starts happening, you know, you have people, you know, they will loot and stuff, like, not in that way, but like I said, like, holding up convenience stores or holding up Dollar General, that wasn't really common when I never felt like you had to watch your back, I guess, but now you do. And I don't know if that's so much just Irwin or if it's like a societal thing.
What about Dunn? So how far is Coates away from here?
Well, it's 7 miles from Benson, so maybe like 15 miles, 20 miles, because I'm probably 8 or 10 miles from Benson and then 7 miles to Coates.
So what do you feel about the community here? I guess it's more Newton Grove than
I didn't grow up here. Okay. So I don't know, but I feel like it's more country, you know. And that's kind of how Coates is. It's more farming.
Because you have patients from all around, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's see. What about your grandparents?
I had good grandparents for the most part. My mom's parents, I kind of got one good grandparent from both sides. And I was very fortunate. I still have three grandparents living. I'm 28. I guess that's because my parents got married young, too. But my dad's dad was a really good grandparent. Very supportive. You know, spoiled us, loved us. You know, anytime we saw him, he'd give us candy, that kind of stuff, you know. And then his wife, my dad's mom, she was kind of a jealous-natured person, I guess. I don't know. But she... I mean, she was nice to us, but she was different. And same thing, like my mom's dad, he grew up in the Depression, and so did, he was only 2 years younger than my dad's dad. But some people grow up hard, learn from it, change it, and they're better from it. That's kind of how Rosemond was, my dad's dad. But Leon, it just made him bitter, and he was bitter his whole life, even though he... You know, financially, he did very well, and so did Rosemond. But that's just a prime example. You know, I guess it doesn't matter. You know, you could have the same bank account, and everyone's different. Like, because they both did well for themselves, but Leon was just a more shrewd-natured person. He was selfish. He used to be very condescending to me and my sister. When I was in middle school, he would say, "Well, you are what you eat," and like he would comment on weight and stuff like that. And I was like very young, 12, 11, 12, 13, about the time a young lady becomes conscious about what she looks like or notices boys, or you know, he was not very nice.
Is he the grandparent who passed away?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Yeah, all the good ones go first. But yeah, Rosemond died about 5 years ago. This November will be 6 years. But he was a good man. He was a good man.
Was he, like, sick for a while, or?
Mm-mm. He worked up until the day he died. In fact, he was working. He got in a car accident, and when my other grandpa was with him, they were friends, because my grandpa Roro said, "Leon's so hateful, he probably doesn't have any other friends." So, Rosemond befriended him. And they were together a lot, I mean. And they were taking pictures of something for appraisals and driving back, and somebody ran a stop sign and hit him. And that didn't kill him that day, but Roro refused to go to the hospital. He just let the people in the ambulance check him out, and he went home. But the seatbelt had just mashed him from where, you know, the impact. So about 10 or 12 days later, it was around Thanksgiving, I brought him Thanksgiving leftovers on Saturday, and Saturday night he was having real hard trouble breathing, and my dad went over there and he died in my dad's arms. He was coming down the hallway in the walker, but he threw like double pulmonary embolism.
Oh, that must have been really hard for your dad.
Mm-hmm. And they were very close. They worked in the same building. He's worked with him his whole life. He worked with him in the furniture store, worked with him selling insurance. Then they worked and did appraisals together, and then my dad got his accounting, but my grandpa still did his appraisals business out of the same building. So yeah, he didn't move any of the stuff on his desk for like 2 years. But I mean, that's hard when you work with someone every day. They're very close. So
why do you think he didn't want to go to the doctor after the car accident?
I don't know if he just didn't believe in it, or if it was the old, you know, some of the older generation. And I think all his siblings had passed away. His youngest brother had died from pulmonary failure, just COPD in stage pulmonary failure, and he had died about 8 or 10 months before. And I'm not so sure that Rosemond just wasn't ready to go. I think he just believed in fate. He had had some prostate problems, and but he never went and really investigated that. He went to the doctor a few times for that, and he took some medicine that was too hard on his kidney, so he quit taking the medicine. And he had AFib, but he wouldn't treat that. So I think the AFib, if he hadn't had AFib, he'd probably been okay from the accident. But he was ready. I think he was ready. I mean, all his family had passed away, except for, you know, the younger generation. So
do you have a sense of how your grandparents or your parents were raised in terms of healthcare? Like,
I don't know, because my mom didn't really talk about it, but I would assume that it had to have been similar, because they were all vaccinated and they were all immunized. And if we were sick, they took us to the doctor. So I think you're a product of your environment. think it's safe to assume they probably had, good health care as they offered. Because, my grandparents, even though my mom's dad, he was gone during the week and home on the weekends, but, he provided for them financially very well, so I'm sure they were taken care of. And my dad's dad, he was home every weekend, and they were more of like a family unit, but same thing with them. They got all their shots and stuff, and my dad is 57, and he has never broken a bone, and he's never been hospitalized for anything. Yeah, he still has his tonsils and his wisdom teeth.
Do you know of any home remedies that your family has done?
Not really. A real bad cough that my grandpa Rara did, brandy and honey. Mm-hmm. He made his own brandy half the time. But, yeah. That's the only thing. The honey coats your throat and the brandy burns it out, I guess, or dries it up. About a real bad cough, but maybe putting your head over a bowl of steam sometimes helping, but nothing to try to not go to the doctor. But we don't abuse it either. My mom would always try to let us fight it for a couple of days because she didn't want to just give us antibiotics all the time. But she would take us to the doctor. So,
have you ever had to, besides at your job every day where you're taking care of people, have you ever had to take care of somebody?
Not so much a family member, but my horses, they've been hurt pretty badly. My horse recently, last year, she foundered in all 4 feet, which is kind of similar to diabetic neuropathy. She got into the grain room, and so it was their bodies are not designed to deal with that much intake of sugar at one time, so it makes the tissues in their hooves become necrotic because the sugar blocks the blood flow. So she was in the ICU at State for 10 days or 12 days, and then she lived there for about 8 weeks because you can't trailer them. So she was very sick. And when she got home, I had to get up at 4 o'clock every morning before work and clean her stall, check her pulses, rewrap her feet, and give her water. My friend checked on her at lunch, and I checked on her when I got home for about 6 months. So
you're taking care of people and animals all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I haven't had anybody that has had any, luckily had any long-term illnesses in our family that I've had to be a caregiver in the home or anything like that. My boyfriend, he broke his foot. I took care of him, but that was a minor fracture. I haven't been very lucky.
Yeah. What do you think is something that's important for important qualities for a healthcare provider, either from your personal experience being a healthcare provider or as a patient?
Obviously, healthcare providers, they need to be nurturing and compassionate, but they view the patient from a different angle than a nurse does. I think the nurse has a more holistic view of the patient. We triage them, we talk to them, we listen to their problems, and then when they go in to see the doctor views them as organs and systems and how they communicate within the body and anatomy and physiology and what they're allergic to and what they can prescribe them and can't prescribe them. And they do probably focus on psychosocial too because of all the new, narcotic epidemic and everything like that. But I think I like nurse practitioners and PAs. They're a little different, I think, sometimes than MDs, but I think experience changes them. Some of the times providers get into the medical field for a different purpose, and then once they start working in it, their purpose evolves and changes just like life. But situations change you. People's lives change you, and you learn a lot about people's lives. Working in healthcare makes you even more appreciative and even more self-aware of what you have and be appreciative of it. but it's important for them to listen to, you know. A lot of doctors will review the notes and go in there and make their own assumption before they even listen to the patient. But it's hard because the healthcare constraints have put time constraints on everything, 15-minute follow-ups, 30-minute follow-ups. Patients need time to talk about what's going on with them, and they don't have the time. So then they get disinterested, like, well, they won't even listen to me. They just want to write me a prescription and tell me to go home. So that's probably puts bad taste in people's mouths. I haven't had a lot of bad experiences with providers. But I can see, you know, I mean, every provider is different too. They get burnt out just like nurses do. But I don't know. I'm not a doctor or studying to be a nurse practitioner or a PA, so I don't know things from their side either. But I know enough to know that they are, even if they did have their priorities in the right order for the patients, things change when you get in the room. Things change when administration tells you what you can and can't do, what the government tells you what you can and can't do, how much time you have to see. When you have to see a certain amount of patients per day, that cuts into quality. It becomes quantity, not quality.
So what do you think the nurse's role is in that?
Sometimes we're able to take more time with the patients depending on the schedule. I think we're also prompted to ask a lot of questions versus nursing intuition on our own. We have health reminders and certain things that we get funded for that we have to ask and have to include in healthcare, and they're important things. But, you know, that does take away from the quality of the visit.
What is health to you?
I think health is a person's view of their self. Like, I view health as I have one body, and I want to take care of it the best I can so I can give to others. I'm a nurturing person by nature. I've always taken care of the horses and my sister's kids or any, you know. But I think you have to make that connection with yourself and respect what you're given, because some people's metabolism is faster or slower, or some people are tall and thin, some people are, you know, short and thick. You know, it's self-awareness. And I think a lot of common problems or obesity or things like that it's from, like, health illiteracy. Like, a lot of people are just not aware of what causes a lot of the problems, or, you know, there's a lot of things that don't get talked about that should get talked about. I think you should educate yourself. Anything that you put in your body, you know, you should know. I mean, I'm not like a health freak or anything, but I know there's only one of me. So I just try to take care of it.
What do you think are some, you were talking a little bit about, like, health literacy in this community and how it could affect overall health. What are some other challenges that you see in this community?
In this community, you know, there's a language barrier. There's a lot of Spanish-speaking patients, and so I think a lot of the information might be in English. I know that I've noticed a lot more things are in Spanish and English, which is good because it's overall helps people be overall aware of things. But that's just like, you know, a big thing is like sexual diseases or sexually transmitted diseases that no one likes to talk about. That it's an uncomfortable topic, but a lot of the diseases are because people are just not aware of how they happen or how to stop them from happening. There's a lot of other ways besides abstinence to have, you know, cleaner, safer sex, but they're not educated. So a lot of diseases and things of that nature occur because people don't have the knowledge. So, and I don't know really how to improve that, but I know that a lot of those things happen because people don't talk about it. A lot of families don't educate their children at a young age, so children experiment really young ages, 10, 11, 12 years old. never been addressed. Sometimes it's better to hear it from your parents than it is from all the kids at school. Parents don't want to have that conversation. I'd rather have that conversation. My parents were very forward with me. I mean, I was in sixth or seventh grade, and my dad was like, I know it's awkward, but I know you're growing up. He was like, but if you ever need to have trouble or you have any questions about stuff like that, he said, I know you talked to your mom. He was like, but don't think that I'm not here for you and can't answer those things too. So I had support from both sides. He said the worst thing you can do as a child, he said, you're going to explore adult thoughts growing up as trial and error. He was like, but the worst thing you can do is make a grown-up mistake and not ask a grown-up to help you. Because you can't fix it yourself, you know, when you're that young or anything happening like that. He was like, you know, be upfront with your parents first. But that has to be, you know, not everybody has that foundation. So, like I said, a lot of it is awkward things to talk about. People don't want to talk about them. Parents don't tell their kids about it because they don't want their kids to know about it or do it. They're going to know about it or do it anyway if they go to school. You can't hide them from everything. So.
Do you think there are any assets in this community that things that this community has or that rural North Carolina has that other places might not have that we can use to address these problems?
I don't know. Except for, I don't know how to promote that unless it were like you're doing, like an archive or internet. I think things are leaning towards that way. I don't know what things were like in general that North Carolina would have, unless sex education classes in school or nutritional classes in school. That's, you can spread things that way, but we promote, obviously, you know, healthcare centers. We promote all types of education. We have a lot of education built into our electronic health record that we pass out. We do a lot of screenings. We give education. We do screenings for BMI, smoking, mammograms, pap smears. We hand out a lot of education for that. So that's, you know, that's very helpful. But I think a lot of health centers are moving that way. During triage, you know, we screen for a lot of things during triage and try to educate. That's probably the, going back to the nurse's role, like you were saying, we promote a lot of education for the patients, even probably before the providers. The providers really probably don't educate as much as the nurses do. I think a lot of that falls on us because of the time constraints.
It seems like this clinic in and of itself is kind of an asset for this community.
Mm-hmm. I think so, definitely. All of them are. We have like 14 or 16 locations. So I love what this healthcare center promotes. I think we reach out a lot more than other clinics.
Do you think people's minds are changing about those like tough topics that you were talking about?
That's hard for me to say, but I do think that younger children that are, you know, active in those types of ways, I think the more that those things are happening, that maybe it's bringing up awareness that more things should be done about educating them. Maybe that will help, you know, parenting, but there's a lot of issues with parenting in general because a lot of grandparents are raising their parents' kids if their kids are having kids at 15, 14 years old. The grandparent is raising the child. A lot of grandparents are sometimes resentful because they expected that they had raised their kids already, and some parents are ready to, you know, have that retirement side of their life or go and, you know, they've worked hard. They put their time in. They want to, you know, retire, and then they have to raise another baby. So I think a parenting aspect has a lot to do with that.
Do you think, what about your upbringing or childhood do you think has affected the way that you are a nurse now and the way that you kind of approach your job?
I think that my parents being very caring and supportive has made me a caring person. But I think if you, you know, my dad's an accountant, my mom's an orthodontic assistant, neither one of those jobs are an extremely nurturing job. I think you're born, my sister's a music teacher, she loves children and stuff, but she's very nurturing. But I think that has a lot to do with because our parents nurtured us. But I think when you're in healthcare, you, I guess to be maybe, a lot of people have careers, but to have a fulfilling career, I think you have to be born with that nurturing trait.
Can you talk a little about going to school and like your friends and stuff when you were little?
Well, I went to a small private school, a small private Christian school in Irwin. And my sister, she started out at public school until she was in the third grade, second or third grade, and then she went to Cape Fear as well. So we went to the same school, and I went from kindergarten until I graduated. So I went to the same school for 13 years, and there was 15 of us that went to preschool together that went to Cape Fear for the next 13 years and graduated together. So that might have a lot to do with it. I had a sound group of friends, you know, that, so I guess our friendships were different, because when you've lived your whole life pretty much with, you know, people that you trusted, we had new people come in and out of school, you know, into our school and go to other schools and stuff, but I had a lot of sound relationships, people I've known a long time.
People who are still here?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any, like, stories of you and a friend from childhood?
A lot of stories. I mean, I used to have sleepovers just like any other youngins. One of my friends, her mother taught violin lessons, so when I was in fourth grade, I started playing violin, and I played until I graduated high school and some on into college. So me and her, we sang in the choir. We had a little girls' show choir. There was about 12 of us, and we sang together from fifth grade until we graduated high school. We did a lot of singing for church things, national anthems for minor league baseball games and hockey games and stuff like that. We did a lot of stuff. You know, we had fun. And sometimes being in a smaller school, you have more opportunities to travel and do things like that. It's not as expensive, and, you know, there are a lot of opportunities. So,
Do you think that you were touching on burnout a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to talk more about that. Is there anything that you've noticed around you, whether it was at the nursing home or here, about burnout?
Nursing home is definitely patient to nurse ratio. Too many patients. Same thing in the hospital. High acuity patients and 7 patients to 1 nurse. The CNA sees the patient, the nurse gives the medicines, assesses the effects, documents, gives the next round of medications, assesses the effects. And then you deal with, you know, any trauma situation in between. If your patient starts crashing, you monitor them and do the best you can, but that's a lot of stress on somebody for 12 hours, 3 days in a row, and then 4 days in a row the next week. That's a lot of stress.
What do you do at the end of the day to kind of take care of yourself?
I ride the horses.
Yeah.
I work out. I used to work out at the gym some, and I like to work out. But, you know, you cut things out of your life. But I try to ride the horses longer distance because I don't just walk. You know, I condition them for the shows and stuff. They're like athletes. I can't take them and run them if I don't work them during the week. They can blow tendons and all kinds of stuff just like we can. So, to be fair to them, I work them. So when I work them, I get a lot of core exercises and cardio myself because I will long trot them for 3 to 5 miles. So it's about the same as being on an elliptical, except I'm the one that's propelling the machine and they'll go to my body. Like if I speed up, they speed up. If I control them with me. So.
Do you go on a trail or do you go around a track?
We have across the road, we have a tree farm that's got the outside of it tilled up pretty good, so it's kind of soft for them to go on. So I take them over there, and then we have about 5 acres fenced in, and I'll go around the outside of that, but there's a lot of hills, other places flatter, so I can kind of go longer. But
Is it therapeutic for you?
Mm-hmm. I love it. They don't like it so much because they don't like to get worked that hard, but they love it when we get back and I spray them with liniment. I always give them a liniment bath every day, and I like breathing that in. I like bathing them. Even if I don't get to ride them in the summer, I probably don't ride them but once or twice a week. In the spring and the fall, I ride them almost every day. Because it's just too hot. Unless I got up at 5 or 4 and rode them in the dark.
Yeah.
But it is therapeutic.
Is that your door?
It's just for the open the other door.
Let's see. Who do you feel like you go to when you need help with something or you feel like you don't have control over situations in your life?
Either one of my parents, just to call my dad. I would call my mom too if he doesn't answer the phone. But I call him first. and I can talk to my sister too. But I think me and my dad think a lot alike. I'm very open-minded. I don't like to assume that my opinion's the only opinion. I like to ask him what he thinks I should do because he thinks a lot like me. He thinks about a situation from a lot of different angles. And growing up, I'll always tell him, you know, any situation or anything I got in trouble for at school or anything like that, or talking out of turn. I never got in trouble for anything or suspended or nothing, but anything like that, you know, my dad would say, well, what did you do to the other person? Or, you know, is this only your side of the story? He said there's other sides to the story. So even though, I mean, he knew I wasn't a bad kid, you know, he still knows that I'm not a saint. You know, he never made me or Catherine feel like we did no wrong. You know, he always was out. My mother, it wouldn't have mattered if I'd slain someone in the middle of the road. I would still be in the right. You know, my mom was kind of that parent, you know. She would go to bat for us no matter what, which is good, but it's not very rational. Because, I mean, if I killed someone, I would hope that she would tell me it was wrong. You know, so that's a very dramatic example, but it's essentially, it wouldn't matter what an argument was about or anything. We were always right. My dad wasn't like that. He was always like, well, what really happened? You know, tell me both sides or all sides. He would always make me think, well, from the teacher's point of view, it could have looked like this, or from someone else's point of view, it could have seemed like that, or you don't know what's going on in those person's lives. So he's always told me to be very careful what you say. That's just as harmful, if not more harmful, than physical pain to anybody. He told me, you know, gossiping and stuff like that. He's like, it's kind of like you can pretend everyone lives in a glass house and nobody can afford for anybody else to throw stones, because that's kind of the truth. You'd shatter their whole home, and who can afford to rebuild their house every day? So he was always very subjective. So yeah, I would definitely ask him first. And my mom gives, you know, good advice, but sometimes I have to be a little bit more selective of what advice I take from her. But like I said, she loves us, no doubt, but I think my dad has just got a more rational mindset.
How would you explain this community to someone who's never been?
To someone who's never been to Newton Grove?
Sure, or Irwin.
Whatever
you feel like you can talk more to.
My dad knows more about the community. He's in Lions Club, and he's very involved in a lot of different things. I hate to say, I've just always been kind of more of an independent person. I've kind of done the horses and the nursing and stuff, but I'm growing into that because I'm young yet. But if I had to speak about the community, I mean, we're very rural. You know, we grow a lot of our own crops and stuff, and my boyfriend is a farmer, and we've lived together for almost 6 years, so I have definitely had my eyes open to a different side of work ethic and self-motivated work ethic, because they work for themselves and they get up at the crack of dawn every day. If I worked for myself, I'd probably sleep in every day. But he's taught me, you know, things have to be done. You have to work around the weather. You have to work around other things, or you lose your crop. So I think it's a hardworking community. I think your hands work more for you than your mind does in maybe rural North Carolina. You know, big cities, I think a lot of times your mind work. You go to school and your mind makes a lot of your money for you. That's what I told Dustin. I was like, we work, it's just different ways. I've used my brain to make my income, and then I come home and I help work with my hands with you to do, you know, the rest of our chores when we get home and stuff. But it's an inviting community. I think there's a, maybe in the cities, maybe I've not lived in the big city, but even just going to Raleigh for the day, you can tell people are, I say selfish, but I say that lightly. It's more like they're more independent, goal-oriented. You know, they're a lot less likely to lend a hand. I think if you break down with a flat tire, somebody around here will probably help you out. Versus in Raleigh, they'll be like, I got to go to here by a certain time, you know, I think.
So is it just you and your boyfriend, or do you live with his family also?
We live in the house beside his family.
Oh, okay.
And we live kind of like in a little guest barn beside them.
So what do they grow?
Everything. tobacco, cotton, sorghum, corn, sweet potatoes, soybeans, wheat and oats, and hay. They grow about 500 acres of coastal hay.
Wow. Do they sell it at...
There's a local feed store that we run all the square bills through. They probably build about 25,000 square bills a year.
Wow.
And then they, around the outside of the fields, we'll get 3 to 4 cuts, sometimes 4, depending on the season and how much rain we have and how soon it gets cold. And they probably build probably 1,500 or 2,000 round bales, and they sell those to a lot of cow farmers around. That's a lot of personal business. You know, just people that they've built up over time, customer base that get, you know, once you get in with a good farmer and you get in with their, that's your hay man, you know, you just go to them every year, twice a year for your cows or whatever you're feeding.
Was the farming lifestyle something that you weren't used to until you moved in with him?
Mm-hmm.
How was that, like, getting used to that?
I loved it. I mean, I love to be outside, so they have animals and horses, and, I mean, it's definitely not... It's not the easiest thing in the world because, I mean, it's hard work. Some days you just don't feel like going out there and getting 1,500 bales up out of the field. But you have to. Because if it gets rained on, you know, you lose money. So definitely makes you realize, like, my dad worked hard, I think, to let us play, per se, as long as we could. And that's different. Dustin's worked full-time since he was 13. He would work, get up early, 4 o'clock and work, and then his dad would take him to school, and then he would get off of work, get off of school, and, you know, go to practice or whatever, and he played ball, was real good at baseball, and then he got hurt, and so he, you know, he quit baseball, but he did whatever all the other kids did, but he worked too, and on the weekends he worked, he probably worked 30 hours a week, at the farm, like working. He ran the cotton modulator when he was 8 years old. So he doesn't know any different. And so there's times where I think he thinks that I was probably lazy or maybe entitled or something, acted entitled. But my dad raised us different. Not that he raised us wrong, it's just different. And I tell him that we've had our differences, but nothing that, you know, and nothing that I really don't agree with him that could be different. I think my parents loved me and raised me in a good way, but I don't think that's the only way to raise kids. I mean, I think I would love for my kids to know farming and know work, especially I think the millennial generation is video games and inside all the time, and internet and cyber this and that, and it takes the family connectivity out. Like me and Dustin went on Facebook, Snapchat, Vine, Instagram, anything else, I'm forgetting, you know, that shit. it's just us. We do, the only thing we have is text and email and phone calls. So it's only us and our relationship, which I like. I don't feel like, you know, we're promoting anything. People promote themselves, you know what I mean? Like, put a lot of their food and their clothes that day and, you know, everything everything for everyone to see. Anyone can see anything you put on the internet. So maybe we're just old school, but I like it that way. It's very simple. And, you know, hopefully if we have younger than stuff, that maybe they'll be a little bit more like that. I think that's healthier. I mean, and anything's healthy in moderation, but if you're glued to it and consumed in it, it consumes you. I think it's a different reality on Facebook than it is, you know, you being responsible for yourself and your own life and your own decisions and stuff. What you're working for, your goals are a lot different if you're consumed in Facebook and you're trying to think about what you want to do to make a career for yourself. I don't know. I like that. It would be very hard to find anybody else that doesn't have Facebook.
We found each other.
Yeah. So, we get along good. And like I said, if we have kids, I would love them more than to raise them farming. And my dad loves that too. You know, he just wasn't raised in farming. But he definitely, he respects it. It's one of the most honorable jobs out there. You know, they feed us, period. Feed us and clothe us. So, but, and raising, my dad said, and he was old school too, like he, raising girls is different than raising boys. You know, he says it's a fine line now because it takes two incomes to make a household. The economy's changed. He was like, but when he was coming through, you raised girls to be taken care of and for them to take care of themselves and like the house and the home. And you raised the men to take care of a family and himself. You know, family first and then himself. But it's different now. You have to raise your children to take care of themselves and each other because it takes every bit of what you make to make it.
So do you think they raised you with both sides of...
My dad fought it for a long time. My mom was like, she's going to get a job when she turns 16. And my dad was like, she's got the rest of her life to work, Doris. You know, he was like, but I mean, when I turned 16, I got my license. I started teaching. I had about 10 students I taught horse riding lessons. So, because I knew how expensive it was. I was very aware of financial struggles. Me and my dad, when I was like 12 or 13, he confided in me about a lot of stuff. So I had a lot of self-awareness and financial awareness, probably more than I needed at that age, because I would stress, you know. But I think it was I guess maybe I'm lucky because I'm of sound mind, you know. Some kids are not, you know, they would stress themselves too much. But, you know, it was a healthy stress because I respected how much things cost before I just said I wanted something. Naturally, kids won't. I might would want something and ask, and then I might would feel bad about it, which I think is healthy. It takes a lot of hours to make a certain amount of money to just go buy something from Walmart, you know. So, especially with the horses, I've looked at when I went and, you know, the tack stores are enticing. They have everything in pink and sparkles and everything for the horses that you can even think to dress them in, and saddles and everything. And it just makes you very conscientious to understand that at a young age. Like, I look at a lot of things. The price is even 12, 13, 14 years old. So when I realized how much it was to put shoes on them, buy the hay every year, feed them, I went to the feed store. You know, my dad would give me his check. And I was like 12, 13, 14 years old, and he would just give me a check and sign it. Because he knew I wasn't going to go in there and buy half the store. You know, I knew what they needed, and I just got what they needed. You know, and I would call him and be like, well, they have this brush or this new whatever that I was thinking about getting, and I would let him know how much it was and stuff. I didn't spend his money like it was mine. He was just very upfront with me about stuff like that, and I think that helped me be very conscious of, because that money's not mine. I didn't work for it. But when I got about 16, I worked at a restaurant. I played basketball and soccer, and I rode the horses in the dark after practice because we had such a big investment in them. If I didn't ride them, it was kind of like, why are we paying for them? So I got students when I started driving, and being at a small school, you know, a lot of the parents knew my dad and, you know, trust me to pick their kids because we had the elementary, everything was there on the same campus. So I could take the kids home each day of the week with me to the barn, and then their parents would just pick them up at the barn after work. So I let the horses pay for themselves starting at about 16, which was very helpful to me and my dad. So he paid the rent for, because we didn't have our own place to keep them. So he would pay the rent for the barn, like where the place we would keep them. But I pay for pretty much everything else. Sometimes I couldn't buy a lot of the hay in bulk, but I fed them, put shoes on them, warmed them, paid for the vet bills, any of the feed, whatever they needed. I would help pay for the hay, and I always go get the hay. Me and some of my girlfriends from school that like to ride with me, we would go get hay up, 150 bales at the time. But, because I had 7 horses in high school, a lot of horses. But once I started nursing school, I had to dwindle down the herd. It's too much.
It sounds like you were really independent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just have one more question for you, because I don't want to take too much of your time. If you had a magic wand and could change the healthcare system, what's one thing you would change?
It would have to be, there's a lady upstairs, and I think about it every time I get asked that question, Miss Lori Hinga. You may want to talk.
Yeah, we're talking about something.
Okay, well, good, because she'll agree. She's the one that mentioned this concept to me. It's like the sandwich effect. They want to put so much into a visit, but not take anything else away. So if you put all these qualifications, quality measures, all these different things to ask, you know, it's such a regimented, appointed visit. You fit all this, try to fit all this stuff into 15 minutes, 30 minutes, and they don't take anything else out. So I just think it, you know, maybe they need to be a little bit more patient-centered and not so much meet this measure, meet that measure. I mean, some of the measures and some of the things we ask do prompt important questions and important things that patients may be going through and things that need to be addressed. And I think it's very structured, but it might be over-structured. I just, you know, patients need a little bit more time. I think, you know, time is the biggest thing for everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that I missed that you
want to
talk about?
No. I think I've said everything in my life.
That was awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I feel like I've talked too much.
No, it was perfect. We want people to talk.